This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
It is 14 minutes to 6.
You may have recently seen NBL player Isaac Humphries publicly come out as gay. Why is it so important and why don't we see more LGBTQIA plus players follow his lead? Well, our next guest has conducted many studies examining homophobia in sport and the reason why athletes don't come out. And Dr. Eric Dennison is a behavioural scientist from BehaviourWorks at Monash University and joins us on the line. Eric, welcome to Joy Drive.
Hello, thanks for your interest in this topic. And it's quite perplexing why more athletes don't come out, isn't it?
Definitely. For those who aren't aware, what has Isaac Humphries recently done and how significant is it?
So first to say sort of what he did, I think he was a bit inspired by Elliot Green, who came out about 2 months ago as the first trans male in professional rugby, because Elliot recorded a video that was quite heartfelt and explained the experience of being trans and in sport and not being able to live your true self. And so it's interesting, many of the same themes in Elliot's Australian, were in the video that was recorded when he was basically talking to his basketball team. So that was the difference, and coming out to them and sharing the hard process that he's gone through. And I think what was very compelling is that we've now seen three different athletes. We also saw an NFL player record a much shorter video, but then Elia and then now Isaac, talking about their self-harm and suicidation around this, and that they felt they really had a choice of either, playing sport and hiding their identities or taking their own lives or leaving sport. And so they sort of defaulted to the idea of I'll just play and hide my identity, and that's not healthy. So it's an interesting, it just shows the depth of trauma that people feel and experience from the constant sort of homophobia and sexism that goes on in sport.
Eric, why is sport such an unsafe environment for LGBTQIA plus players? And why is there such, a strong push to not be themselves and not come out?
It's an interesting one because it's a different answer for male or female sports. Of course, sports, played in a binary, most sports. And so in male sport, the issue really is this constant use of homophobic banter and sexist banter, or just talking about women and sexualizing women. And it was assumed that everyone's heterosexual. And it's interesting because when we do research and when our colleagues around the world have done research, and we ask these young male athletes, they say, so why are you using this language? And like, oh, because there's no one gay on our team. So why it's not harmful, but we would never use it around a gay person. You think it's such a heteronormative environment that it doesn't even cross their mind that one of their teammates could be gay or could be struggling with their gender identity. Because typically people who don't conform to gender norms are the ones who are targeted with the language. It's not necessarily gay people. And then in women's sport, it's totally opposite in that we find that generally women are accepted. And interestingly, even when we do research with women and girls, they don't really have an issue with trans people in sport. But the issue that they have is when you make a big deal about it or when you come out. So it's sort of this idea of living in a glass closet where it's okay to be gay, it's okay to be trans, but just don't publicly announce it because it will tarnish the rest of the team. It will essentially tarnish their identity, and it doesn't matter. And so this idea of the stigma that, all women who play sport must be lesbians, particularly sports like maybe cricket or AFLW. And so it's different kinds of stigma or different kinds of forms of discrimination in male and female sport.
Right.
And they need different solutions. And so it's just sport has literally done nothing to solve these problems. It's all been really grassroots driven, like Pride Cup, who I know is on your station quite a bit. That was driven by them. The AFL didn't pay anything for them. You know, they didn't fund it. Even government has knocked them back repeatedly, right? So sport has just not done anything to solve these problems. So whereas in schools, we do see a concerted effort, and we've actually seen change in schools because there's been a concerted effort, whereas sport's a business. It doesn't really care about LGBTQ people. I mean, I hate to say that, but we've done research around the world, and there's just, you know, there's a few people who care, but broadly, they just want to play sport. They don't care about anyone else.
Eric, I'm just thinking, you just mentioned things have changed in school. I mean, I'm going thinking back at my time at school, you know, and many of us had a similar experience where it was very traumatic. You know, you were picked last for teams, et cetera, and what have you. And sport became, a traumatic experience and something to really fear. If things have changed in the school environment now, does that mean eventually it will make its way down to professional sport?
No. So what we see in school settings is the sport environments within schools are still viewed as very dangerous settings for LGBTQ plus people. It's broadly in schools, so walking down the hallway in the, you know, kind of going to the toilets day to day in the cafeteria. That's where we see a big reduction in the amount of homophobic language use. So we analyzed data that's been conducted for the last 2 decades, and we found that it's gone down from about 60% of kids using homophobic language regularly in school to only about 20%. Whereas we still see in sport it's around 60% of boys are using homophobic language regularly. So, you know, that just shows how normative it is. Like these boys are literally not using it in other settings. They're not using it at home. They're not using it with anyone else. And so
just in sport.
This won't, yeah, so it needs to really be a trickle-up effect, not a trickle-down. We know professional sport's not going to do anything, but we need to start with children's sport because increasingly, at least at Monash University and other universities, we don't see this as sort of a sociological curiosity as it was seen as before. This is a very, very, very serious public health problem and child protection problem. So when kids are exposed to homophobic language, as you know, it doesn't actually matter whether they're heterosexual or LGBTQ, they're much more likely to self-harm. And they're also more likely to drop out of sport. So we're getting to the point now where this is not really an optional thing for sport. And I think what you'll see in the next sort of 2 to 3 years is that we're kind of over trying to play nice with them. We're kind of over trying to get them to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it's soon going to turn very much into a child protection, child safety problem, and they're going to be forced to do it. So I just feel like, you know, it's those who are sort of on the front foot, like to their credit, rugby union is quite advanced in this. When I say they haven't done anything, they haven't really done much. It's all sort of grassroots. But at least they're sort of talking about it. Cricket's also doing things in the grassroots, but the national bodies and the state bodies are not doing anything. And those are the people who are responsible.
Absolutely. We're chatting to Dr. Eric Dennison, behavioural scientist from Behaviour Works at Monash University, about homophobia in sport. Eric, you just mentioned, you know, there's not really much happening and it is really actually cause for concern. What would you like to see happen on a large scale when it comes to trying to tackle homophobia in sport?
Well, the most important thing we need right now is for there to be a crackdown in coaches and their use of behavior. So, and I'm talking about male sport, because you can't really, it's important not to confound the experience of male and female. So let's just talk about male sport going forward, because we study that a lot. So with male sport, we need these coaches. So at 100% of teams that we study, players report that coaches have used homophobic or sexist language in sort of the past 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
100%,
you said? So that's a really, 100%. We haven't found a single team yet where there's been players not reporting this behavior. So these coaches are responsible for stopping this behavior. They're legally responsible. So we need that. And there's nothing being done right now to make coaches behave properly. And it's tricky because coaches are generally volunteers, even in schools. And then we have the second layer, which is coaches need to be empowered, but then we really need the captains and the best players to step up. We know that having someone come in and do some education or training, that makes things worse. I'm going to say that again. Having someone come in and deliver diversity and inclusion training, whether it's in sport, whether it's in workplaces, whether it's in schools, it makes things worse. And we need to stop doing that. So we need people who are in that environment to, you know, targeted education is important in terms of finding those two or three people who are influential, getting them on board and getting them to drive the change. That's how you drive change. Outsiders doing it, they're just viewed as outsiders, and actually they're they can reinforce the problem. Then the third thing is interesting, Pride Cup. So as you probably know, Pride games seem to be very effective. And that so clubs that host Pride games use about 50% less homophobic language and about 30% less sexist language. So we don't really know why these are so effective, but we suspect it's what I was just saying, is that you can't have outsiders come in and change an environment. You need people to change it from within and make a decision to change it. So by having these Pride games, Rainbow Theme Pride games, we think it just gets everyone involved in that environment to recognize that everyone else in that environment is actually a nice person. They're pro LGBTQ+, and they don't feel this need to use this homophobic language anymore to fit in, because it's typically used just to fit in. So that sort of trifecta might work with coaches, captains, and sort of best players, and then Pride games. We also think Respect Women and Girls games could work, which the AFL has played with a little bit, and Rugby Union started to roll out. So it's that kind of multifaceted thing, but what we know does not work is things like posters, pamphlets, guest speakers coming in to, you know, talk about things. Those things absolutely do not work, and we need to stop wasting our money on those things.
Eric, it's a really important and interesting conversation. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but we might have to get you back and continue the conversation.
No problem. Thanks so much for your interest in this.
Thank you for your time. That's Dr. Eric Dennison from Behaviour Works at Monash University. And if any of this conversation has raised any issues for you whatsoever, you can head to joy.org.au/support.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.